On Saturday at 7:30 p.m., the Kalamazoo Singers will appear in a program called Royal Voices. And joining me here today is director Rick Phelps to talk about the program. Thanks for joining me once again.
Of course, Kara. Love to be here with you.
Is this going to be the final concert in the season for the Kalamazoo Singers?
Yes. This is our last concert of our normal three concert series of each season. We are going to be singing at the concerts in the park, so we have that date, but it's not an official part of our season.
Now, this will be taking place in a different venue than the last concert, down at First United Methodist Church, and I believe you've opened this up to collaboration with a couple of unusual instrumentalists.
Yes. Well, I'm not sure that we want to say that our instrumentalists are unusual, but yes, this is actually a collaboration between the Kalamazoo Singers as a chorus and the wonderful Latorno organ at First United Methodist. So we're really, it's those two parties. And of course, an organ needs to be manipulated by a skilled technician, and our two organists are Elizabeth Bruce, who is currently the organist at First Presbyterian Church, just around the corner from First UMC, and David Scout, who's been active in organ circles for 20, 30 years. He's currently at All Saints Episcopal in Saugatuck.
Well, I don't think organists would really object to being called unusual for any number of reasons, but they're always some of the most fascinating people to collaborate with and to almost learn from as you get to know them as musicians. You also get to learn interesting things about the instrument they play.
Yeah, I've learned a ton from David as we've conversed about the instrument as the instrument, right? I've learned a lot of the language, the terminology that goes with how you talk about an organ. And I've also learned from other people, you know, some people like me, I grew up with being surrounded by fantastic organ music and fantastic players. And then I've heard from other people who say, they tell me, I don't really like the organ. And it's like, well, why not? How can you not like it? I love it. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's huge. It's so majestic. And I think what's interesting about the organ is that it is a very complicated machine, but as itself, it isn't, it can't be expressive the way a violin or a piano or a clarinet can be expressive, because it's not controlled by the user in the same way. The way an organist controls the expression is either with a foot pedal, which creates a swell in the sound, a crescendo in the sound, but more than that, the organist changes registrations, which changes the timbre of the sounding pipes. And that's where an organist's great expressivity lies. And if you go to, you know, an average church, let's say, and you hear an organist who doesn't change the registration from verse to verse in the hymns, then it begins to sound same, right? Same old, if you will. But then you have an organist who changes registrations appropriately for the text of each verse, and suddenly, you know, it comes alive.
It's almost too much for my brain to take in, to think about what they're doing at the instrument. Whereas I can fully understand how you manipulate a clarinet or a flute with, you know, timbre and
right.
embouchure
when
and things
When you play
like that.
Your flute, when you play in a concert, you add your own personal addition of energy. You increase the breath flow. You increase the shape of the phrase. And even, like you just said, you can change the sound, the timbre, the thinness or the fullness of the tone by the way you manipulate. But you can't do that on an organ. You can, you know, if you're playing one, just simplify it, play one note on the organ, you can't do anything to make that expressive other than step on the pedal, right, pulling it in or out. But when you add different registrations, which is like it's like if Brahms says, okay, I want to add this sound, so I'm going to add clarinets and flutes to this passage, or I'm going to give this to the strings, or I'm going to have the full orchestra play. That's what the organist does. The organist is more like a composer than any of the rest of us, because that organist sees the black spots on the page and says, okay, I can play this straight up boring, or I can find the registration that makes it match either the text or the mood of the music. And in that, I think organists are just brilliant.
And they don't get celebrated as often as they might.
Just on Easter and Christmas.
So it's an incredible skill to look at music and at the same time recompose it and reorchestrate it as you play. Even composers have a lot more time to think about what orchestration they want than someone playing organ on the fly and reading music and changing registers. So Elizabeth Bruce and David Scott will be important parts of this concert on Saturday at First United Methodist. One thing that organs have over voices is unlimited air, unlimited tone, and fixed pitch. You get what you get.
That's right.
And when vocalists and humans come along, we bring our own set of quirks, including, you know, length of lines are restricted by breath. And I'm wondering if you're considering that when you're sharing, when the program is shared between organ and voices.
Yes. To make the answer short and quick, yes, that's definitely a part of the consideration. Another part that we don't think about too much is that it's actually quite difficult for choruses to sing with a piano or an organ, because we tune choruses to a more absolute pitch than the well-tempered intonation or tuning system of the organ and the piano. So a major chord for us is for singers as an ensemble is brighter and more absolutely in tune. I don't really want to get into trying to explain that, but the way an organ and piano can play everything in tune is that the entire instrument is slightly out of tune across the board, but we're not really sensitive enough to notice that. But when you play in a string quartet, or when you play in a saxophone quartet, or when you sing in a choir, you're not trying to tune to a well-tempered instrument, you're tuning more absolute pitch in your ensemble. So in many ways, it's easier to sing a cappella than it is to sing with a piano or with an organ. And that's not even getting into what you mentioned, you know, that the organ doesn't need to breathe and that sort of thing. So there are challenges that come along with singing this rep.
What is the rep for Saturday night?
Well, it's wonderful stuff. We've got everything from Mozart, who is our earliest represented composer, and a very simple, beautiful little Jubilate Deo that he wrote when he was maybe 10 or 11, something like that. I might have my numbers a little off, but very early. Then a beautiful Brahms piece called Geistliches Lied, which is it's so Brahms. It's so beautiful. It just makes me melt when I hear it. The gist of that piece is just trust in God, you know, basically. Then we come to really the 20th century with Vaughan Williams, with Britten, with Herbert Howells, and the Durafle. We're singing two movements from the Durafle Requiem, the first and second movements. Durafle actually wrote an organ version of his Requiem, and it's lovely. You can also use organ and percussion. We're doing it with just organ. And then the newest piece that we're doing is this wonderful Jubilate Deo by Mac Wilberg, who is the, I think he's currently the conductor of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And so we're doing this in an organ version as well.
That sounds like a full program of nationalities as well as time periods. You know,
sure,
with
sure.
A little German, a little British, a little French.
That's right.
And American.
Yep. It would be very easy to do an entire concert of music for organ and choir from Britain. it would be easy to do it from France. You know, I mean, but this is a nice eclectic mix. Maybe a little bit more of music from the UK, but still a lovely mix. And they're very contrasting. You know, we have very soft and reflective in the Brahms, the Durafle, but then both of the Britons are really powerhouses. And then this the Wilburg Jubilate Deo is just on fire. It's very exciting. A lot of mixed meter and you know, makes you want to just get up and shout. It's very fun.
Again, this concert is Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at First United Methodist Church, and tickets are available in advance. You can find out full details at KalamazooSingers.org. My guest here today is Rick Phelps, who has been leading the group for at least 5-6 years now.
I think this is my 7th or 8th season. They do start to run together.
No, I'm terrible with guessing how many years have passed.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast they go.
Well, if you were going to pick something out to talk about today, and then maybe we could hear some of the piece, what springs to mind?
Well, for a little snapshot, I would say let's take a listen to the beginning of the Durafle Requiem.
Thank you.
We've just heard music of Maurice de Reflet, the French composer, 20th century, who I know destroyed quite a lot of his output and only allowed certain pieces to be published. His masterpiece of a Requiem is one of them. And you can hear why it stands apart. And it's not that often performed. I'm glad
not
to
enough.
See, yeah, glad to see this on your program. Would you tell us a little about what we just heard?
Yeah. So the Requiem, what de Reflet does is he takes the ancient Gregorian chants that most of us are no longer familiar with and sets that as the melody and then harmonizes around it. And he does that in both of these first two movements. Many of our audience members will know the Ubi Caritas. Ubi Caritas et amor Deus ibies, something like that. That's the chant melody, and then he turns it into this wonderful motet that high school and college choirs around the world perform all the time. And he did the same thing with the Requiem. Beautiful thing in the second half of the Requiem movement, he starts with the tune in the basses, in the tenor's answer. So you hear Requiem aeternam. And then a few pages in, after we've brought the women in and said a few things, then he brings back that same tune in its entirety, the entire tune, which is 6 pages long or something, and he brings it back in the organ. So then the organ has the solo melody, while the rest of the choir is just floating ethereally above that. But then always underneath, Maurice Ravel seems to have these wonderful little running lines of 16th notes that just give it this forward motion, this perpetual churning of energy. But it's very undercurrenty, you know. It's very subtle, very in the background. And it combines those ideas, the ethereal nature of the choir, the organ playing the tune, and then the busy work of the fingers playing all this filigree. It's a wonderful, wonderful combination.
If memory serves, at First Presbyterian Church, the organ loft is...
It's in the back. It's in the back of the building.
So the organist will be positioned, actually, at the opposite end of the building.
No, that's at First Press.
That's at First Press.
That's at First Press. And okay. That's exactly why we're doing this concert at First United Methodist, because we knew that we could have the choir in the balcony in the back of the building and do the concert there. But that's relatively uncomfortable for an audience either to be sitting with their backs to us or to crane their necks around and try to see. Works perfectly well for a worship service when the focus is at the front, because it's not a concert. But this being a concert, we want the choir in the front and the organ and the organist in front. So that's why we're over at First United Methodist, because the building suits perfectly for our needs.
Yeah, and the organist can see you.
That's right.
And the choir can see you also, all from the same vantage.
Correct.
Point. And that's absolutely necessary to pull off some of the intricacies of the music you've programmed.
It would be very difficult to do a lot of this music with, you know, just using a mirror, because that's a lot of what you have to do with organ concerts. You know, the organist is often stuck with the back to the audience or whatever, and has to rely upon a mirror to see what's going on. And that's I can't imagine that challenge. You know, you're already manipulating this massive instrument, and then to try to keep the conductor in a little window, right? That's really tough.
The other thing I think of is how the space will contribute to blending the two kinds of source sounds. I mean, the organ sound and the voices of the Kalamazoo singers. Always important to consider
absolutely
the space.
Absolutely. And both buildings have enough vertical space, and you know, the length of the sanctuary is enough to take that sound and mix it in the building before it comes to the audience members' ears. So we'll be up front, and you'll be able to see us. It'll be fantastic. And you can, you know, just close your eyes and be enveloped by the majestic sounds that you'll be hearing.
It's the Kalamazoo Singers in concert Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at First United Methodist. And would you tell me a little more about why you chose Royal Voices as the title.
Sure. It's the continuation, the final concert of our season. And from the beginning, I've talked about this is our season of The Voice. And of course, you might say, well, wait a minute, you're a choir. Isn't everything The Voice, right? So what this is more about the voice of something. So the first concert was The Voice of America, which is jazz, the musical voice of America that is indigenous to our continent, something that we invented. You're like, oh, right, yay, is jazz. That's something that grew here. We've taken it everywhere, but it is the unique contribution of America to world music, jazz. So that was a jazzy Christmas, our first concert. Second concert, we explored the voice of the people or the folk. And that concert was called The People Sing, Folk Songs and Spirituals. And then this is two great voices, the voice of the choir and the voice of the organ. You know, choirs have been around a long time, but they are not universal. And in Western music, the organ and the choir kind of developed simultaneously. As the organ became more complicated, we went from like solo singing to chanting in unison to chanting in parts or singing in parts, and it grew and grew and grew. So the chorus became a multi-voiced, multi-part musical instrument. And the organ, which for 500 years reigned as the most complicated machine in human history, until it was actually replaced in complexity by the very first telephone switchboard, you know, like a telephone exchange.
Much less romantic.
Yeah, I know. The organ or the telephone, you know, which one? But, you know, you think about combining all those different phone calls and putting the wires in place, trying to connect person A to person B and have them talk to each other. Very complicated. Amazing. But the organ for 500 years was the most complicated machine ever devised by the mind of man. Amazing. And so because of its expense and because of where it grew, organs were featured in royal households and churches. Choral music was featured in churches and in royal households that had enough money to have an orchestra and a choral ensemble, you know, whether it was operas or church music. And so you get royal from several different angles. You get the sponsorship. You know, I mentioned in an article that I wrote that Haydn worked his whole life basically for the Esterházy family. Bach worked the end of his life, the last 20, 27 years or so, in Leipzig, but he was an employee of the city. The city owned the churches. The city owned the school that he taught in, and he was responsible, answerable, employed by the town council. So he works for church and state. You've got the Esterházys, a form of the state, but he worked in their chapel to write music for their private church services, if you can imagine. That's so foreign to us as Americans. You know, we don't think of owning our own church, but these royals did. So, sorry, long story to get to the end of this. That's where we get the idea of royal voices. It's this fusion of church and state, sponsorship, governance, money, and amazing music.
And somebody once called the organ the king of instruments, I believe.
Yes.
So there's royalty there.
It's too bad that you said that just now because I don't have the quotation right in front of me, but it's in the program notes. So when you read the program notes, you'll know who said. I think the quotation goes something along the lines of, "To my eyes and ears, the organ will always be the king of instruments." And we'll let you come to the concert to find out which famous, 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 famous composer said those words.
All right. Well, the concert is Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at First United Methodist Church. My guest is Rick Phelps, and he's collaborating with organists Elizabeth Bruce and David Scout for this concert, Royal Voices, featuring the Kalamazoo Singers. Of all the things we could end with here, the concert will go on a journey from Mozart and Brahms to several British composers to Durufley and Mack Wilberg's Jubilate Deo. What should we finish here with a teaser?
I think we should go out with the Britten Te Deum. I think the festival Te Deum really sets the tone. It's very exciting. It's a wonderful contribution to choral and organ literature. And I should say that we are featuring a young man, 11 or 12 years old, from the Kalamazoo Children's Choir named Nathan Thompson, and he is our boy soprano soloist on the Benjamin Britten Festival Te Deum that will be accompanied by Elizabeth Bruce on the Latorno organ at First United Methodist Church.
Well, Rick, have a terrific concert, and good luck next season as well.
Thank you very much. Look forward to being back here with you in a few months.